Well, hello, hello, sweet venturers. Welcome back to another episode of Venture Maidens. We're hard at work getting our audio, video, and Patreon content back on track, so I don't have any big announcements for you today. So, let's share some gratitude, then I'll hit you with a recap of what happened last time, and we're off to the races. A huge thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our favorite campaign theme song. Another big thank you to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music. And the biggest thank you of all to the wonderful, beautiful, incredible patrons who donate monthly to our Patreon to keep this show going. Y'all are the brightest stars in our universe. As promised, here's that sweet, sweet recap of what happened last episode. Last time, on Venture Maidens. Though they traveled different paths to arrive, our heroes were finally reunited in the central greenhouse inside the Hanging Gardens, just in time to fight a massive rose golem guarding the long-abandoned garden. The gang was amazed by Aoife's new fey powers during the fight, but between sleeping spores, bearing attacks, and frightening strength, the creature still proved a tough target to take down. In the end, the crew defeated the guardian and harvested the magical roses from its corpse. Gidget and Arrow said farewell, promising to check in as soon as they learned more about the uncovered Titan research. Bruised, battered, but victorious, our heroes left the gardens to show their prize to Reynard. And that's what happened! So now, here's the episode.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. One sovereign deal is now broken, but another has awoken. Can our party embrace the change, or has our bard become too strange? Keep your friends close as we head into favor. Episode 43, Being Human.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Venture Maidens. Oh my god, it's been so long since we recorded, but I am thrilled to be back here recording episode 43. Damn, kids, that's a good number. How y'all feeling? We're all back together. We're all like, what's up, you guys?
I'm so excited to be here and so happy to see you all again. I missed you all.
Yeah.
We missed you, yeah.
I know.
Things were hard. Things were scary without you.
Not having you in a Hecna one-shot
was definitely frightening.
Oh my, even Celeste was having to pull some weight with the puns. I never thought I'd see it.
I was there channeling you, Sage. Luckily, it was a Halloween episode, so I was there to enjoy that horror. I could justify it, of all the puns. But.
Yeah, it was a good time. The gang managed to survive, though, yeah, with a handicap, barely. Of course. We missed you dearly, mm-hmm, and we mm-hmm made some very unusual animal friends.
Yeah, as one would expect in any quality Venture Maidens game.
Hell yeah, but we're back! We're back now with the main story, recording some hot, fresh episodes for you all. So yeah, we're gonna dig into that in just a few moments here, but before we do, of course, I wanna say, hey, if you're new, welcome, we're the Venture Maidens, a D&D 5th edition actual play stream that converts to a podcast. This is a very adult-themed stream, so you can expect general themes of, you know, graphic, fantasy, violence. In general, we keep a body horror content warning up just in case. Don't anticipate any other specific content warnings for this episode, but you never know, so just keep your eye on chat and in the podcast show notes, just in case something else comes up. Other than that, yeah, I think that's it. So hey, everybody, my name is Celeste Conowich, and tonight I will be your Dungeon Master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I'm going to be playing Luvary Sath, your Drow Rogue.
Hello, I'm Nassim, and I'm playing your Half-Orc Fighter and Budding Druid, Fitonia Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and tonight I will be Aoife Flannery, your bangin' bard.
Ooh, yeah. Also, podcast listeners, you can't see it, but there's a hot new profile picture for Aoife right now. Her full fae-ness is on display. So we've been seeing some changes in this party, but, you know, we'll talk about that very, very shortly, because we're going to do that sweet, sweet recap in a bit. But before we do that, Tony, last time, you officially, like, achieved your heroic destiny. You have advanced the symbiosis destiny and gotten a sick new feature because of your budding relationship with Arrow. So do you want to tell us a little bit about what that is, what you got now?
I sure do. Straight from the Venture Maidens campaign guide.
Yeah, Venture Maidens book. Wow, look at that reference. Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, our tier two features. We get to call a friend, which I think you know where that's going. Essentially, I get to call my new best friend, Arrow. You have established enough trust with your chosen creature type that you can call on them for aid. During a long rest, you can attempt to contact creatures of your type to travel to you. The way you contact... Wait, does that mean that I can just call for horses?
For alicorns, yes.
Oh, alicorns. Oh my god.
Yeah. Mm-mm. That's why it was a super good thing that you found out how to make more alicorns in the last few episodes. Because also your tier four feature as a preview is you summon a, like, basically a fucking army of alicorns.
That's what's about to happen. It might be a mystical connection. You may have left trail signs to follow. Perhaps the creature sense your need, or maybe you send a physical message to a nearby settlement. Whatever the specific circumstances, at the end of a long rest, one creature or small group of creatures, at your DM's discretion, arrive if they are physically capable of doing so. Shall I read the whole thing? There's actually quite a bit of explanation to this. I can keep going.
No, that's pretty much the basics of it. There's, like, but after that, it's just basically some qualifiers, right? So, like, this is still at this level, you can't necessarily have the creature show up and fight for you, like, risk its life. Mm. So more the kind of help it will be willing to do, like, it could cast spells on your behalf or, like, help you travel from place to place. Basically, you can ask this creature to show up and do something that isn't going to put it in direct harm.
Mm.
To, like, carry messages for you, have you fly somewhere, you know, like, cast those healing spells alicorns can do, that kind of business.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
So now you officially do that. So anytime during a long rest, as part of a long rest, you can call Arrow or another alicorn to, you know, help you. So you have a summon.
Amazing.
Now.
Yee!
Yeah! Yeah, so that's super cool. So that means officially all of us have achieved tier two of our heroic destinies. So, I mean, as you can imagine, this act has four act structures, or this campaign. So next season, in act three, in fall, we can look forward to telling those stories that will unlock tier three. But for now, you all have done it. And so as summer is drawing near to the end, you're fully stocked up with cool features. But yeah, talking about that in dramatic nonsense, let's travel back into our memory banks. So last time you had all, fought, like, met back, literally stepped through dreams to come back together into this hanging garden. Aoife, using your new dream powers, you had teleported Lou basically with you. You'd stepped out of the dream to help Tony and Gidget and Rook in this fight against this dormant golem thing that had been keeping all of these plants alive in this greenhouse for who knows how long. You had managed to defeat it. And I'm going to say, you know, after that big fight, obviously, you had connected with Gidget, some introductions had been made, you were able to wake up Rook, and Gidget, everyone, you know, was back, and figured out a safe way to transport these two gigantic roses, which, as a reminder, are each about the size of, like, a human chest, so quite large. And I know, Lou, you were interested in making sure you took some of, like, the roots and, like, thorns so you could, like, maybe get a clipping to propagate as well, right? Yeah, so I think, Tony, you know, with your, like, herbalist knowledge, no worries. You can absolutely get, you know, as much as you need to be able to do this and remove both the blooms without causing any damage to either of them. I don't think you even need to check. You're a pro. Like, whatever. Though you've never worked with flowers at this scale, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely not.
No, and especially not roses, too, because, like, roses are very fussy, and your people, like, weren't from anywhere that would support that kind of, like, you know, huge open grasslands. Not exactly great for roses. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, flowers in general, she doesn't have a lot of experience with. It's more just...
Yeah, like the tiny little wildflowers, like at most, but like these like big mm-hmm. blooms, you know, this is like the luxury kind of shit you would see, you know, in Eldrin Estates, right? This is pretty mm-hmm. wild. But yeah, so you are able to get out of there. Gidget, you know, calls her gnome crew. Basically, you are all able to kind of like backtrack through these gardens to make it back safely to that entrance. Thank goodness you had taken out that rock guardian earlier, so there really aren't any obstacles to stand in your way. And unless you all have anything you want to say or, like, you know, note for Gidget, I think Gidget's play is she's going to take the Animar and Amalias, that book you found about, like, literally creating Alicorns. She's going to take those clay samples, some of those tools you found, and then basically head off to her friend that she implied she knew someone who could potentially use this to maybe get things going. And then I think Era will also express interest, you know, once you all are back literally on the ground, probably going with Gidget to see if there's anything he can do to help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So is there anything in particular you wanted to, like, say to Gidget or Arrow or any kind of scene you want to have? Or do we just want to, like, transition, you know, until you're all back on ground?
I'm just sure I said something to Arrow about, like, let me know how things go. If you need help with anything while you guys are doing this research, I'd love to know what you guys discover.
Mm-hmm. And he would communicate to, like... Thank you again for everything. And of course, I feel and I know this has brought us together. Our destinies are tied now and forever. And if there's anything you need, and he puts his, you know, forehead against yours, just call.
Oh, yes, she puts her forehead against his, presses in a little bit more, gives him some good pats. I will. I'll see you soon.
And so the gnome ship, you know, an Arrow kind of fly you all down back, like drop you off at the chicken hut, which was, you know, like craning its big window eyes up the whole time as you're like coming down from this horrifically high place. But yeah, so from there, I figure, because we do have our date with the Blossom Court Sovereign, that is kind of the next big, like, main plot thing we have here. But I know there were a bunch of different threads or things we wanted to wrap up, considering all the stuff we have learned in the last two episodes or so. So if y'all are amenable to it, I was thinking maybe, like, we'll do about a week of time. Like, you all can decide what you want to pursue, if there's anything you want to wrap up or downtime you want to do. And then at the end of that week, you are, like, the Serena's emissary is going to show up at a location that you all pick, and we are going to advance that plot. So this episode is kind of up to you guys, like, what you want to do, what kind of order you want to pursue.
I think so. It's kind of like a recap of, like, where we are, what we've seen, what we're doing, and kind of, like, our big questions that we have. So the promises that we got from the Tsarina was to send an emissary of the Eldrin Court to go and do this talk, establishing a ceasefire between the Eldrin Empire and the Fae Blossom Court. And while these talks are ongoing and while we're negotiating out some deals, and then to collect and share intelligence on the whereabouts of the Krillin, since we really don't have any clue about what's up with them. Some kind of our big things that we have, our big questions are, we still have no idea what Hecate is up to or, like, what her endgame is. We don't know who is on Hecate's side or maybe what leverage she's used to get to broker some alliances to amass the power that we've seen her kind of seen secondhand. And we don't know who is behind the attacks on the Tsarina, which is, you know, definitely one thing Aoife wants to figure out for sure. And then so we need to complete our deals with Reynarn after trading off of our big favor. And one thing that Aoife wants to work on kind of in the future, probably not during this week of downtime, but is to trying to set a trap using the Enigma Codex against Hecate, because since she can read everything that's ever written ever, to see if, like, if we write a letter to be like, oh, we're meeting here and we're planning on doing this, and maybe we can lure some agents and then capture them and interrogate them.
Mm. Yeah, see how close attention she's really paying to what's going on there, for sure. Cool. Yeah, and I know, I mean, Lou, like, you definitely, you had You just got out of this dream. You talked to Jada for the first time, learned a bunch of shit. I'm sure. Is there anything you in particular wanted to do or action, considering all you know now?
Yeah, I mean, from the letter that we had at one of the, I think it was the last episode we did, she's definitely, after once again getting fucked over by magic, deciding that she wants to kind of start the journey on getting a handle on it so that she can start to fight back with the same kind of force and have a better understanding of it. She also had sent a letter to Frida, not only asking for tuition, please, mommy, I'll make you proud.
Please, so I can go to wizard school. Thank you. Yep.
But also to keep an eye on Cassie, both for protection and to see if she can get any more intel on, like, what the fuck her backstory is, because after trying to talk to her, like, she doesn't feel like she can't trust her, but it does seem like there's something that she's holding back, whether it's of her own volition or not, she's not sure. Cautiously dipping a toe into those waters.
Yeah, so spinning up your wizard courses. Yeah, for sure, for sure.
My number one goal, if we have a week of downtime, is I want to use downtime activities to make some fucking money. I need another patron. And what I would like to do, because of the situation we found ourselves in and the situations we have found ourselves in the past, is to see, after hearing about Tony's whole adventure where she met Lorenzo and Beasley, if they have like a courtier contact with the forest court so we can start working our way on buttering up the next court.
Nice.
I would love to feeding them and have them proactive. Be my patron.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And then Tony, obviously you just completed this big thing, like this whole favor, you know, that was like why you were in the Hanging Garden. So obviously going to resolve that with Reynard, and the settling other favors here. But is there anything else in particular you wanted to make sure we got to?
Mostly just upgrading Tony's armor before we get into like the heat of another big battle, because like I said before, I pick fashion over functionality, and you know Tony doesn't do that, but I wasn't thinking about that when I made her, and so she's a little squishy for someone who wants to be the wall between the other two companions.
Yeah, well, I think also too, you know, when you made your fighter, I think you spent your money on, like, the big sword and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
So you couldn't afford the biggest armor. Now that we're higher level, we have some money. We have some cash.
Now we have some spending money. We have these really, really valuable roses that we're going to try and do something with. But yes, definitely upgrading Tony's armor is priority number one.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of money, make sure, so we've been about a week or so. So Lou, you do get your 30 gold pieces from your two current patrons at the start of the week. So that is good. Yeah. Okay. So I guess starting things off, here you are, like you land at the Chicken Hut, which was in the mortal realm, basically, like where, you know, you went into that point here. So here you are in the mortal realm. Where is the first place you all are going?
I say using Kit to open up a portal to Reynard's and just get that done and checked off.
Vanna white this motherfucking rose and then be like, okay, you didn't say you needed it, bye.
Yeah.
And as you all, you know, you come back to his study and like meet up there to Kit will kind of hop down off of whoever he's been like hanging out with and just start like, like doing that little fox like chitter sitting on Reynard's desk. I'll listen. Huh. Well, it seems you all have been running into quite some amazing things. And I hope you don't take this personally, but Kit has requested to return home at this point. Kit has had quite enough excitement. Am I getting that right? That's all that's given. Yes. So, thank you for your time, but we will call that favor settled.
We also have the Gordon seed.
Yes. Yep, that was something that Aoife grabbed. So, yeah, he will take that, and there's just like a wicked glint in his eyes before he like puts that in a little breast pocket.
Tell me, Gordon seemed none too pleased to hear the mention of your name. It seems that there may be quite a sordid tale between the two of you.
Well, I've, certainly there's a fox tale or two between us. But, now, you know the deal. If I'm going to be revealing secrets, I'll need something in return.
Fair enough.
You're no fun. All right.
Well, you know my MO. Those in power need to be taken down a peg. Let's just say, Gordon had quite the run of things for a while.
Yeah. I mean, we did kind of get that vibe.
And I was going to say, Aoife is still in her sleeping court vassal form. And she hasn't figured out how to transform out of that yet.
Oh,
it hasn't really occurred to her. Is there any expression or hint from Reynard about seeing the change? That kind of change there?
That's a good question. You want to make me an insight check?
All right, we've got a plus 7. So I got a total of 14.
You have a plus 7.
If he does have an opinion about it, he is playing it very close to the vest. So he's either not surprised somehow by this, or he doesn't care.
Here's nonplussed. Got it.
Which is a little odd because you want to just one more time give us the general description of why you look different now. Rainbow hair to your butt and such.
Oh yeah, so because when Liu was taken captive into Jada's constructed dream prison, while Tony went off to go and pluck these roses, Aoife decided to go and try and find the means in order to help Liu get out of whatever was keeping her trapped in sleep, in a sleeping state. And after she had taken some dust and meditated and sought out Felix's presence, he came to her and said that, I can grant you the power to be able to interrupt this dream state. But in exchange, you have to become a vassal of the sleeping court. And Aoife recalling all of the times where she had felt power and agency, and which was dealing with the Fae, she decided to take on this deal in exchange for power. And so as a side effect of that, becoming now a full-fledged Fae, she is a little bit taller and she looks more mature and she has these sharp angular features, and all of her clothes are this kind of dreamy, hazy blues and pinks and lilacs, and her hair like reaches almost down to the floor, and her horns have an extra layer of curl to them as she just appears so saturated and vibrant.
And I know, Tony, you had like a very brief chance to like hear about that, but that probably you might still have some questions or discussions about that whole thing. Just floating that out, by the way. Rook obviously wasn't stoked.
Rook was mad.
Yeah, Tony. Also, she's always had her prejudices with the Fae, so she's like, what did you do?
Well, more than anything, too, I think the last reaction from Rook was just like that, just okay. Like, and that just like horrible sadness. Like that point when like a parent is like, I don't even know what to say to you right now. I'm just like heartbroken.
Resigned disappointment.
Yeah. So Rook hasn't exactly said much to you since that. So that's a whole unresolved emotional ball of whatever. Reynard as well will mention that the only outstanding favor is, of course, arranging that meeting now between the family and Briar, his wayward child, running around Chassiana apparently doing crimes and in need of some teen help intervention. So that's that one thing, but we can safely assume that you've already communicated that and like that is in the works, so we can call that resolved. And as you all are stepping sort of out of Reynard's domain, yeah, Tony, I think there's definitely a feeling that comes, like, more than just, like, an emotional, like, there is a magical weight that is, is that any, like, thing tangible, or what do you feel, like, when that tie is broken?
I think it's like the air feels a little less heavier to breathe in. Like, you know, for a real life example, when you're in a really humid environment, you can feel how much moisture you're taking in with every breath. And it's like almost hard to breathe in. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's kind of lifted. It's a little bit easier to breathe.
Yeah. The air is sweeter. It's clearer. You feel, yeah, lighter. Like after you get a really great haircut too, and you like chop off a lot of it, that like, like something changes. You can feel it, and this like dread that was kind of sitting on your chest that you just sort of learned to live with for the last month or two is gone.
Yeah. How nice.
You owe nothing to no one. Let's see how long that goes.
I've learned.
You have learned a lot.
I know not to. I've learned so much.
So proud of you. Now it's just Lou and Aoife who are dealing with fuckery.
I'm almost out of here. And then I have to deal with, you know, an undead fiance.
You mean, except for your dead girlfriend being like, yeah, in the perpetual thing. Clutches. Yeah, sure. That's what we resolved. Yeah. No worries. Almost out of here.
Almost done, baby.
What's next, gang?
I feel like most of everything else that we need to do is in Chaosiana. So I think that we skedaddle over there.
Remind me real quick, Chaosiana, that's where your family is, right, Lou?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. That's where I want to get my armor.
See if you can get a sweet deal.
Yeah, obviously a big, you know, major city working with the family. I'm sure you can get a sweet discount, you know, figure stuff out. You will also, your mom will send you a letter probably at some point just letting you know an update that actually Cassie is currently staying in Chaosiana after you asked her to kind of look into what was going on with Cassie and like getting caught up. Ms. Judge Cross is still pretty hard on Cassie's ass, like in that investigation after everything that went down in Phelan, and it was getting a little dodgy. So for the time being, Cassie and your mom thought that it would be in everyone's best interest if Cassie just kind of took a little sabbatical and spent some time in Chaosiana where your mom could actually like have more influence and make sure she doesn't, you know, disappear in a black car in the middle of the night, right? Never to be heard from again.
Sure. Yeah, Lou is just filled with anxiety because one, she never explicitly told Cassie that she was part of like a mafia of good guys,
no.
For one. For two, she doesn't...
So, probably, yeah, hearing from Frida was probably total surprise for Cassie.
She doesn't know how much Cassie has told her mom about their relationship, and she's like, oh, this is someone who's not even officially my girlfriend yet, and, she's meeting my mom, who is... A lot.
And the whole family. And you're like, is she staying there too? Because your mom was not clear. Like, is she literally at your house? Like, you don't know.
Is she in my room where I used to share with my almost wife, who is now undead? And I don't even know if she knows about Kat. I have a lot of, like, Lou is just like, in between every moment during travel, she's just like staring off into the distance. Since that letter came.
Yeah, that whole business. Yeah, so I think back in the chicken hut, you know, while you're all in Cooper, it's a very short jump, you know, to anywhere else in the mortal realm at this point. So you're going to be at Chaosiana, you know, in a couple hours. So if you do want to, like, take some time to rest, I assume, like, park for the night and, like, rest the hell up, like, get your shit together. You've been dungeon crawling and exploring ancient ruins and basically just, like, went through Atlantis. So, you know, I imagine some R&R is in order. Yeah. Yeah. So during that, you have, like, kind of a night, I think, before, you know, you all go back. So maybe this is the time. So are you like planting the rose you mentioned in like the greenhouse, cutting?
I also think that now that we have that add-on to our house, the same kind of arrangement to enclose the garlic but grow it there as well, so that we have it for the road.
Just make sure it's in a pot. It won't like fucking grow. It won't, because this is even more like, you know, at least you got a warning from, you know, Garlic Princess about it. You don't know anything about the care and maintenance of these like Titan roses. Who knows what's gonna happen?
all you, Tony. Lou is definitely the person who's like, I can tell you all the things you need to do to be successful with plants, and then immediately kills them when she's actually doing it.
In theory, here is how you care for plant. I don't know why, Di.
Okay, we'll have a raised box for the roses, and we'll propagate the two in there. Should we? Well, we want to sell one of them first, right? Should we propagate the other?
So my whole thing was, you can probably go ahead and still, like, the blooms right now are still, like, very much intact. But since you did take the time to, like, take some of the roots and everything, that's really what you need to do the propagating, or, like, some leaves. So I think you could have safely taken that material without actually damaging or needing to use the full bloom itself. Because the bloom is, if it is like other flowers, that bloom isn't going to last, you know, much longer, yeah. Right? It's true. Dead.
Yeah, so then we'll do the leave thing where you, like, kind of cut them open so that they're open into the soil. Yeah. It's very moist. They're covered. Should I do some kind of roll for it to see how successful?
Yeah, give me that the herbalist tools roll. So basically, you're just going to make that with probably, you know, want to use, like, wisdom, I think, on that. So roll a wisdom ability check with your proficiency bonus using your herbalist tools.
Oh, that was a natural 20.
Holy shit. Okay, so then you're like, yeah, all right. You know, they're giant, but so far it seems like normal roses, right? You're like, okay, well, here it is. You know, you get it all set up. Like, they go on the ground easy. No problems. You tent them. You give them the human, like, seems just like a normal rose, right? Like, if there's any of the wild magic stuff going on, you don't know, it all works. So you might expect.
Beautiful. Very excited about this. She's gonna be in her flower era now after this.
Yeah. After that, we're in her flower, our bloom era. Hello. It's summer. We're ready. Bloom, baby.
Spring is coming. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess it's summer. No, that's right. Fall's never mind.
You reap what you sow, though, in fall, man. It's all good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's good. Yeah, it goes in there and nothing wild happens. You don't damage the blooms. So you have these two hefty blooms. So again, you probably do want to sell those off. And Coven is probably going to be the easiest place to justify selling something like this. You're going to get a lot of fucking questions if you try to sell these in the mortal realm anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But, you know, no fae would blink a fucking eye at, like, oh yeah, giant, huge, beautiful, perfect roses. Of course. Like, what are these, Blossom Court roses? Oh, hell yeah. Like, you know. So that is how you're spending, you know, some of that long rest. Aoife, Lou, is there anything you guys specifically wanted to cover in that rest before we go? Anything you want to catch up on? Discuss, do, organize, bake?
Yeah, I assume with the letter that I got back from Mom, I got my cannoli recipe, so I'm going to make some cannolis.
You did. You did.
Get that practice on.
There was one ingredient that your mom didn't tell you, and she's like, I'm sorry, Loopy, I can't give you everything. Like, the one little secret. She's like, this is for you. You must fill this on to make them your own.
Oh my gosh. All right, she'll put orange zest in the cream.
Maybe that was it.
And love.
I don't know.
I think Aoife spends most of her evening kind of secluded in her room. You know, I think this is the first time where she, you know, she steps in front of a mirror and really looks at herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't feel regret, but she feels that panic that sets in of, what did I do? What does this mean?
It's like after you get bangs, you're like, wow. Yeah,
no. I'm stuck with this for months. Oh my god. No.
Oh my god. I hope I like
I
this.
Wish it was as not serious as giving yourself shitty bangs.
Oh my god.
So that weight of her decision begins to sort of press in on her, and she just thinks of Rook's face again after hearing her decision, and that kind of, you know, resigned disappointment. And, you know, she got the sense from Lou that, like, this is great, that, you know, this is your decision, wouldn't have made that choice, but happy for you.
Yeah, Lou wasn't exactly rah-rah when you talked about it.
And Tony's very similar reaction of, or of like, that's a fucking choice. I thought we were trying to not do that.
It's a choice. It's a choice.
And so she just spends her evening in her room really taking in everything that it means. And that I think she's trying to will herself back to her small adolescent form again.
Yeah. So after Tony, after you propagate these like roses, where do you go for the, like, where are you hanging out for the rest of the night?
Probably for a while in her own room, thinking about everything that's happened. One, enjoying the small victory, this big favor.
It's a huge victory. That's off. Not small. That's you are out of debt to your
thank
enemy.
You. Thank you. It's a huge victory.
Yeah, you celebrate. Man, yeah.
It's a big ass victory. She'll relax, take some time to herself, mostly in her room, bathe, wash, sing, play her guitar, things, the small things she enjoys. And then go out, and I think she does still have things that she wants to talk to Aoife about those decisions.
Yeah, yeah. And then, so, yeah, you're hanging out doing your own thing for a while, and then, Lou, you're just, like, in the kitchen for a while, right? Kind of making food. So you'll see at some point, maybe, like, halfway through, while Tony's still in her room, Rook will just, like, come downstairs and kind of throw herself down, like, on a chair. So, like, close to the kitchen door. And then, like, every time you get up, you know, every 10 minutes or so, you see Rook is kind of inching, like, closer, like, a chair closer to you. And then she's, like, comes into the kitchen, is, like, hovering around, like, looking for a drink for a really long time. Sort of just, like, being around while you're, like, doing your thing.
Lou just kind of, like, first is just kind of giving side-eye, like, what is she doing? And then there's, like, a moment where she realizes, like, Rook wants to talk to me about something.
Yeah, and you're like, oh god, she's being so obvious about it. Like, this is a human who have never tried to do this before, and never tried to talk to you before about anything.
Yeah, for real. So she eventually, like, while Rook is looking through for, like, a drink, she reaches above her head and she grabs what she knows is her favorite mead, and she just kind of, like, gestures towards a chair and pours her a glass, and she's like, something on your mind?
Oh, thanks. I guess I'll have a drink.
Yeah, keep me company.
So, how are you doing?
She, like, has to stifle a laugh for a second. She's like, well, I've been better. But happy that, you know, we got rid of that debt for Tony. But I can't say I was having any personal fun while you guys were gone. Actually, you know, I did want to talk to you about that trip you went on with Tony.
Yeah, and she seems like, you know, there's a little deer in the headlights, like, oh, you're asking me about me. Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, what about it?
I just, obviously, we have had conflicting moments in how we handle things, and surprised to find out how much we seem to unfortunately have in common. Even now with, you know, my dating and everything like that, with her being a Corellian, like, I want you to know, like, I'm not ignoring your experiences, and I did ask my mom to look into her. I'm not trying to be foolish here with that, and I hope that you don't think that I don't value your opinion and your experience. And I just wanted to say that I know that with such similarities, we've really both taken different paths on all the pain and heartbreak. What's happened to us I wanted to say that while I don't match your approaches, I don't think that you're wrong in how you handle things. I think that it's just different, and that's something that I am really trying to respect and get used to on my end.
And she's, you know, mostly just kind of nodding sort of quietly in the chair for a bit, and takes a while to sort of gather her thoughts. I realize after spending time with people that I'm not the easiest person to spend time with. I'm finally learning that I haven't been around people a lot, and so I don't feel that you're doing anything wrong. I think, you know, you've been mortal a long time, and if there's anyone who I should be looking to and being more like, it's more like you, I've decided. So I think that you're doing good, and you have been hurting much longer than I have, so maybe I should stop being such a dick about it. So that's what I've decided. And I'm sorry that happened to you. I know a little of what it's like to lose someone to forces that you can't control. And that's terrifying. And I'm sorry.
Well, we can both be sorry together. And she pours herself a glass of mead too, and she looks like she's thinking for a second, and she reaches out and puts her hand on top of Rook's, and she's like, for what it's worth, we haven't known each other for that long, and if you want to look up to me after all we've been through together in such a short time, you risked your life for us. I'm happy to play the role of big sister if you want to follow along.
I don't really know what that means to really have, you know, family like that. But that seems nice.
I know that I'm mortal, and it seems like that's something that's normal for me, too, to have family, but before I came to the surface, I didn't have that. And it will change your whole world, and it make life, even in the shittiest times, worth living, if not for yourself, for your family as a whole.
I think that's, why I wanted to be mortal in the first place. I think I had a little bit of that with her.
One thing that I learned after I lost Jada is that while it's so good to love so wholly, you can't ever let somebody become everything, because life sucks.
They die.
People leave, whether it's intentional or not. And you need more people to back you up than just one person. More reasons to smile. So, welcome to the family.
Thanks. What do you think about this thing with Aoife?
I hate it. But people are going to make the choices that they make. You can only be there to help them clean up the mess.
Tony, you have a finger up. Do you want to kind of come in? Yeah, for sure.
I think Tony is starting to hear the conversation happening outside. Aoife's name is what...
Yeah, when did you... Yeah, and it's totally up to you. I think... Yeah, I think Rook is, like, totally vulnerable, so you could have heard as much of that as you want. Rook isn't paying any fucking attention, so.
No, I mean, I don't think she was really eavesdropping, but, like, Aoife's been on her mind, so she's like, oh, they're also discussing Aoife. I want to hear this. I want to know what they think. So she'll just kind of stumble out of her room. She was thinking about talking to Aoife, too, but, I mean, Tony can come across hot and heavy sometimes, so she's going to stumble in, see what the group temperature is, and be like, oh, we're talking about Aoife? How are we feeling about Aoife? So
I think that's exactly what Rook wanted to do. Instead of just talking to you or talking to Aoife, she's like, Lou seems like the most mature and reasonable person. I need to hear what Lou thinks before I just pop off.
Oh, yeah.
Lou, seeing Tony come in, grabs another glass and pours more mead and passes.
Yep, good, great.
I mean, what is there to say? We don't want to become more entangled with any kinds of deals and you know, obligations that come with that. But who am I to tell her what to do? She's an adult, you know? We all make...
Is she?
She is. She's somebody...
She's 16.
I don't know if it's because you guys weren't with us when we were in Phelan, but this is a complex individual who thinks about her future and everyone around her at all times. And to be frank, I hate that I feel like I'm the cause of what happened, but if Aoife hadn't come for me, I don't know where I'd be or what would be happening right now. She made a really hard decision.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. I don't think it was in any way premeditated. It was...
For sure. And I can't tell you in all honesty anything right now that I would have come up with to fix the situation. I think that as much as I hate it, it was fucking smart. And that's the kind of person she is. She finds a solution and then she follows it, sometimes with reckless abandon, but it's all with good faith to take care of the people around her.
Well, we don't really know what else happened. I wasn't there. I don't know what you went through. I still haven't really heard a lot about what you saw, but I'm really curious about what Aoife went through to get to that point. Why did she feel that was the solution? Was there really no other way? I don't know. I'm not familiar with... I've only just started dealing with fey magic and bonds and things like that. Granted, she probably knows more than I do. But I want to know what brought her here.
Well,
and I don't think we know that yet. I don't think I know enough to really understand it.
I think the court did. Listen, I mean, we can stand around and say it was Aoife's choice and whatnot, but how long has she been talking to this dragon thing?
Well, I remember her bringing it up, and I was like, all right, crazy pants at the time, because I don't know shit about dreaming, and quite frankly, I never want to do it again. But that...
This guy, this thing, it's been in her head for how we can't ignore that they wanted her, and that's how they work. That's how all the fae work. They make you feel like it's your choice and that it's a good idea, but it's never really. And I don't know fucking anything about the Sovereign Courts or the Sovereign Fae. I wasn't a Sovereign Fae. No one I knew was a court. So this could be completely fucked, and I'm out of my depth here, and I don't know how to help or not, but I'm scared.
Do you know really what it means to be a vassal? I don't even think I know what that means.
I don't, the court's always, you know, kept to themselves and stuff. They, you know, other fae only came in when they were in the way or they were needed, right? I lived most of my life never knowing much about them or anything, but now it seems like they're everywhere and they all want things. And if Hecate is part of a sovereign court and she's the big example we have here, I don't think we can feel good about any of them.
I don't think we have a choice but to pick which one seemed like the best option of all shitty ones. At this point, with the amount of power that we've had a hand in giving Hecate, we need allies. And what we have support from...
But we don't know what if what Aoife's doing means that they're an ally at all. It could mean that...
Oh, no, for sure. I'm just saying that we can't write off all Fae courts. We have to work with them in some capacity.
Yeah, well, okay, sure. I agree with that. I think I'm still just stuck on what this is, what this means for Aoife. I think I'm going to go talk to her.
I don't feel like I'm in a place to say anything about it at this point since she literally saved my ass. So all I can do is respond when shit hits the fan.
Yeah, Rook says, me too. Like, what she said.
All right. I mean, am I gonna do this alone? Does anyone want to, anyone interested in joining, making it a group conversation?
Oh no, intervention.
I offer you a cannoli of support. And she pushes across two cannolis on a plate and gives you, if you eat the cannoli, you might feel inspired going into this conversation.
Rook is like, okay. Well, if you need someone, like, I'll go, but I think I'm probably in, I mean, I gave up everything to not be one of them, well, and she just,
I guess,
changed everything. She just sacrificed everything I wanted in a second to be one of them, so I'm a little biased.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm sure, you know, there's... Yeah, I get that. You may not want to hear the reasons anyway. But, I don't know. I just figured in case anyone wanted to make it a little... No one has to repeat themselves. We just kind of get it all out in the open for everyone to hear at once. But, sure. I can go. I have no problem going alone. I just figured I'd offer.
I think she wants us both to go, Lou.
Okay. Refills, everyone. Pours more mead and also another glass, and then also like balances just the tray of spare cannolis that she didn't pack up on another arm, and she's like, let's go.
Oh, question for you, Aoife, as well, because you have Siwan now. Is there a place that Siwan lives in your room now? Does she have like a place of honor? Is she just kind of in your bag? Or does she place those like sentient
stuff
flute?
In the bag? No, no.
She have a case, a little case where she sleeps, or like.
So on her drafting table where she does all of her drawing, I imagine there is like a little wooden stand that she places Siwan on top of, and yeah, I imagine they kind of just idly like talk to each other because like Aoife's kind of one of those people who will just speak her thoughts aloud, and then now she has someone to talk to.
Yeah. And also because Siwan can, like, speak out loud or be telepathic, you know, it's nice. Like, it's almost like someone on the radio who's kind of, like, talking to you, but not really. Like, that kind of, like, it's non-interference when she chimes or chatters in as she's getting more used to, you know, more attuned to your mind. I don't think, Lou, I think maybe you saw the flute, but I don't think it's talked to anyone. I don't think anyone's met Siwan other than Aoife yet.
I know of a flute, but I have not spoken to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lou has seen it, but no one else has heard her.
All right, so some gentle steps towards Aoife's room. You come with me if you want. Again, no pressure.
We're all coming with you. You all wanted us to come with you. We're all coming with you.
I am also afraid that if you two go, it's going to be...
Sure.
...loud.
I won't say anything. I promise.
Some gentle knocks on Aoife's door. Hey, Aoife, are you up for a little chat right now? Don't want to disturb you if not.
Aoife is sitting at her drafting table, and she's got these, you know, big square sheets of paper that she's been doing pastel, like, charcoals with. And you hear from the other side of the door, "I'd come in." And you see her sitting at a stool in front of her drafting table, and she looks over the back of over her shoulder and sees the group of you all kind of like with that expression that you can't help but have that says this is a serious conversation face, and like the hi.
But we brought honey wine.
But there's booze. We're all already a little bit tipsy, so, you know, it's a little less serious.
And with kind of a carefree hand gesture, she waves you all into the room and motions at her bed. And you see, kind of scattered around the floor and across her table, you see these visions from Lou would immediately recognize, like, from her dreams, and like a quick sketch of the restaurant that we had stepped into as part of her dream restaurant, and just a lot of like vague abstract shapes and symbols and very kind of cloudy, hazy, like abstractions of things, like something, you know, very, very dreamlike.
We will set down everything at Aoife's desk and immediately walk over to the drawing of one of the scenes from the dreams and just flip it over so you can't see it.
And like after Lou flips it over, Aoife, she kind of gets the hint. She'll scatter them all together in a pile and set them off to the side. And she'll say, "So I gather this is some kind of intervention to talk about this big decision that I made." And she'll swivel around to face all of you, and her hair is still these long, heavy locks that drape to the floor and kind of form this almost cloak around her.
Well, in a way, yeah. I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it an intervention, but I do think we all have questions, but I don't want you to... this is... how do I say it? How are you doing, first of all? How do you feel about your decision?
I certainly welcome questions. I can't promise that I'll have the answers to everything because it's still so new to me. Like, I don't... Like, am I stuck like this forever? Can I go back to how I previously looked? I mean... It's great, and I love it, and I feel so much more in myself than I've ever felt in my whole life, but I don't think everyone's going to be as receptive to it as you all have been. And she kind of swivels back in her chair to face her desk, and she picks up this flute, which is this bone white flute with these dark swirling blue veins that kind of weave through it, and she'll swirl back around and she'll say, "As a part of my accepting being a vassal and this power, I was granted this by the sleeping court," and she holds it very delicately and reverently in her hands. "It's a talking flute. Her name is Suan, and she's really lovely. We've become quite good friends."
And you would all hear telepathically in your minds a sing-songy female voice saying, "Hello. It's a pleasure to meet you all. I can see it's not 100%.
Okay.
As cordial, but I'm happy to be here nonetheless. Thank you for inviting me into your home. It's nice."
I'm sorry. Half the time I don't even fucking know if I'm dreaming or not anymore. So this is... your... okay, your person. Wow!
No, I'm a flute.
Yep, you're a flute.
I'm not a person, per se. I'm a flute.
Okay. She just stuffs the cannoli in her mouth so she doesn't have to talk anymore.
It's a very common mistake. I think even Aoife, you called me a person just when we met, so Don't feel bad about that. But no, I am a flute. I'm not a fae, and I'm not a person transformed into a flute. That's also one I get a lot. I am a flute.
A pleasure.
A pleasure. Yes.
So Inifa will place her back onto the mount and will say, one of the Nuska brought her to me, and from what I've learned about her, she's kind of an artifact from, not unlike a magical sense necessarily, like, you know, whatever, but, you know, in the other sense of like a leftover image, I guess you could say, of when an archfey fell in love with an eldrin and their love couldn't continue. And so the eldrin never saw this archfey again. And the archfey cast all of her love and her wisdom and her devotion and her sorrow into the different portions of the wilds. And one portion became Suwan. And so, you know, I think that really speaks to me. And I think that's part of why she found me.
Yes, I have served many very special members of the Sleeping Court since then. Aoife is one such person.
Who decides who's special and what makes them that way, that you were sent to her? I mean, I know she's special, but she just signed up for y'all, as it were.
I suppose that's a good question. I suppose I just always go where I'm needed. But if anyone had to choose, I suppose it would be the Sleeping Sovereign. I do serve the Sleeping Court, after all.
Okay. So, Aoife? Someone's got their eye on you.
And more to Tony's question of how I feel after having made such a choice. I feel a little bit panicked now because the weight of it is really sort of pressing in on me. But I don't regret it. I don't regret it for an instant. In a way, it feels almost as if it was the only choice I could have ever made. Like, and maybe I'm being manipulated. Maybe I'm being made to feel that. But deep down in my bones, I just feel like this is where I'm supposed to be. Like, I, you know, satyrs came from the wilds. And we emigrated out and made a home in the Valley of Ulanthanol. And maybe somewhere in my bloodline, hundreds of generations away, maybe I had someone who was involved in the Sleeping Court. But it's that kind of call that I feel.
Well, I have to say that's really reassuring to hear, actually. I get the panic and all that stuff too, but I was surprised that you feel so comfortable in it too, with all the changes and whatever it means and however you're feeling right now. It's good that it feels right to you, but I can't lie, I'm still kind of freaked out about what it actually means. I don't know what a vassal is. Does that mean that you're a vessel? Like, they can hear and see everything you hear and see? Are you like a foot soldier to them? You do whatever they ask of you? These are the things that I'm worried about. It is great that it feels good to you, but with what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, I'm just concerned about how much it involves them.
So, when I started on my search to figure out the solution in order to get Lou trapped out of whatever state she was in, I went back to the Midnight Quarter in Coven, where we had a run-in with bringing in a bounty who was a dust dealer. And that was where the first time I had seen the Nusca, you know, those little serpent guys who have been leaving marbles everywhere. And I figure, you know, if they're harvesting the dust from these creatures, going back to them and figuring out some way that perhaps there's some way that can, you know, that it could be reversed, or how she might have made it by using a bunch of them, or from a specific one. Or so I asked around for hours, and eventually I found a dealer, and I, you know, with a a handful of gold, made an exchange and decided to try it for myself. You know, in dreams in the past, I had spoken to Felix, the dragon individual I think I've told you all about. You know, when we had right before we had the run-in with the giant who was from the celestial court. That was when I had my first dream of Felix. And I called out to him in my dust-induced sleep for guidance, for wisdom, and what he had said to me was that he couldn't affect Lou's dream because it was a constructed dream. It was, you know, a thing that was made. It wasn't a natural dream that one experiences in sleep. But in accepting this power, he said that the dragon will come again and ask something of me, but not today. So I kind of imagine it's like a feudal society where, you know, at the bottom rung, there are lords and they have some command, but ultimately they serve a king and they serve dukes and whatnot. So I don't know how much they can see or experience through my senses. I mean, I'm sure we're probably connected in dreams. I haven't slept since that day, so I don't. I mean, tonight will be an experiment, I suppose. But this was the solution I found.
Well, I guess that's fair. I wasn't there, so I don't really know what you had to go through.
But at least now we don't have to worry about getting unexpected visitors in our dreams anymore. I can be sure of that.
We kind of like...
I like that.
Like, it looked like she was just her normal, like, upright self. But in hearing that, you see her, like, relax a little bit. She's just been, like, dreading trying to meditate again tonight. Not sure what would happen. I don't mind the perk so far, personally. And as I told you before, whatever happens, I'm with you. So, hopefully, if this feels right to you, we can just celebrate that for now. And whatever may come, we'll deal with it then.
So as your Felix guy, Rook is like kind of just been standing this entire time, like in a corner, just like standing uncomfortably. Have you thought at all about, like, what you're going to, like, do, though, walking around in the Fae? Like, you can't go into Coven now. Have you thought about that, the whole no court or the Legions thing? Is that, like, even occurred to you? Or the whole, like, hey, walking into the Blossom Court, like, you, what if that's an issue, right? I'm sure they just don't want other court people just, like, showing up, right? That was, like, a big deal when we talked to that other dude. So what's the plan there? Your dream daddy say anything about that?
I'm not laughing.
Oh, my God. And even from a few hours ago, she looks a little bit smaller, a little bit softer, a little bit more like her natural self. And she says, I'm trying to figure it out.
Okay, well, I mean, I think we're going to have to figure it out fast if we're supposed to be, like, making alliances and stuff. Like, I don't know how it all fucking works, but I do know that Fae can just see it. I don't, like, I remember that. Like, you could just tell, right? That's why, like, those Slytherin court fuckos, you know, hiding out in Coven, they always have some magic or some, like, shield or some shit. So I don't know what that is, but you gotta get some of that. Otherwise, we're fucked, right? Like, we're fucked. And she's looking around like, right, guys?
I don't think you're wrong. I just don't know anything about it.
Well, it's as easy as not including Aoife in some of those outings, right? Like, it sucks, but if we can't...
We're not going to invite Aoife on the diplomatic mission? Are you fucking serious? You think we can handle that?
Sure, shit ain't gonna be me, I'll tell you what.
Do you want to stay behind? You can, if you don't think we can.
I just think it's gonna be a problem, us showing up and be like, hi, can we talk to you, member of court? We got this other one here. No worries.
So they...
Well, at the very least, I mean, with Hecate probably has an alliance with a number of courts, and we're going to have to scramble to get the rest on board, and who we can come get to us. And the courts haven't been allied in God knows how long, if ever, in a substantial manner. And why not? And why not starting with this? I mean, at the very...
It could be a benefit. It could be a benefit. Say we have a member of the Sleeping Court here who could speak on our behalf, try and get them to join us as well.
But you're like a vassal. Like, do you have permission to say, yo, Sleeping Court, I'm making an alliance on behalf of, you haven't even met this king or whatever.
I don't think anyone's met him for quite some time. I think the whole point is that he's missing.
Then how did he pick you? And she, like, looks at the flute and points her mead glass at the flute. She's like, how'd she get picked by this sovereign if nobody knows where he is? This is new information.
Well, that's why I just said, and Suwon says in your mind, I said I supposed the sovereign wanted me to go, but like I said, like Aoife, I sense my purpose and know where I belong on instinct. I knew I had to come. I knew I was needed. And so I came.
Look, Rook, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying it's not a valid concern. I'm saying I'm working on it.
Rook, so I thought that you just weren't allowed to have altercations that were about court fealties. You can't go in at all if it...
No, Coven is neutral, completely neutral. Anyone who is bound to an allegiance can't enter. That's why there's no court activity there, right, legally. That's why, like, that Slytherin court thing we busted up, that was all illegal. That's how they get in there. They sneak in, they find back doors, but there are no courts operating in Coven. It is a strictly neutral, neutral place.
Well, could we maybe reach out to your friend Beasley? She was from the Forest Court, and she was there.
But they brought her in, right? The Slytherin Court snuck those people in there and had them imprisoned. I'm not sure she would...
She wasn't imprisoned. She was waiting in line to go to an event.
Yeah. Okay.
I still think Aoife can help us from a distance. Maybe she doesn't have to be there for every meeting and discussion, but you can whip up a patch I could put onto my, you know, armor somewhere, and it'll give me a boost for something, right?
Well, why don't you just ask if this Felix guy is so fucking great and can just hand out powers, tell him to give you something, right? Just whatever that Slytherin court is doing, their little goons can get into Coven, right? So get some of that.
Or just ask the court themselves. How can I still go around and...
Well, it seems like Felix is the only one we know other than this goddamn flute. You know any other Sleeping Court members just showing up? Apparently their king is gone.
Lou looks over at the flute, and she just goes, so sorry.
She's like, it's all right, I'm a flute. That's what I am.
And Aoife, with a pointed look at Rook, says, as I said, I'm working on it. And you can see that, like, she's trying to hold her tongue and be polite. And we'll turn to Tony. Any other questions?
I know you shouldn't have brought me here. This is like, Rook is looking at Tony. After looking at that, she's like, I said I wasn't gonna be able to help you. I don't know what you wanted.
Didn't ask you to come, but sure. No, I think that's all we really could know for now. You're still learning, we're still learning. We'll figure things out as it happens. I don't think it would hurt to ask if, I don't know how you contact the Sleeping Corps, but I don't think it would hurt to ask how you might still go about things in particular parts of the world.
Of course.
What about walking around in the mortal realm? What if we walk by a Corellian on the street? People just don't, they just don't. Okay, all right, I'm sorry. Okay. Fine. Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, I think we're good. I think we know as much as Aoife knows. So as far as we're concerned, we got the answers we could get, right? Okay. Great. Aoife, thank you for doing what you did for Lou. We'll figure this out together.
Of course. And anything that I can share, I will share. Of course. I'm not trying to hide anything from you. That's why I told you all the first opportunity I got. You know, I don't want this to be some horrible rift between us. She looks at Rook.
I don't know. I mean, you seem like yourself for now, but it's never just that with the Fae. It's this and then that, and then it's something else. So I don't know.
I let people too.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, we have a lot to think about and learn about. Let's all get some rest, okay?
Here is to fortune on our future endeavors, regardless of difficulties that may get in our way. And she, like, raises her mead glass. Let's end on a positive note, everyone.
What a toast. Let's go.
Lancha.
Yeah, I mean, dude we've never met versus Hecate, we're probably still looking better. If we're being quite fucking honest.
Close to positivity. Good job, Rook.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Good.
I
good,
did it.
Good effort.
All right, everyone.
Shoots it, whatever the fuck it is, and I start, like, shoving Rook out the door. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Rook will leave. Rook will leave. And then go like, plop down in an armchair by the fireplace and pour out another glass of whatever.
Lou goes and, like, gathers all the plates and the untouched cannolis, and she steps out of the door and then kind of, like, steps back in, and she's like, do you, Aoife, mind if I meditate in here tonight?
Oh, sure.
What a world we live in to be afraid to close your eyes, am I right?
I feel that. I myself, even though I know what I'm capable of, I'm still feeling a little reticent for what sleep holds for me.
Well, I'm not sure what I can do for you in your dreams, but if any shady shit happens in the waking world, I'll handle that. I'm gonna go, clean up, put my curlers in, and, you know, I'll be back. Last thing. Can you not draw what you saw in Jada's dreams? It hurts to see.
Oh. Sure. Do you want me to rip him up or something?
No, just don't do it anymore.
And in a gesture that doesn't, I don't know, it feels almost a little bit off character for Aoife, you know, she goes to kind of, like, push Lou's hair back out from, you know, out of her face, behind her ear, in this very, very sensual gesture as she has that glint of her fae-ness again. And she says, of course, anything to keep you safe, to keep you happy. And she'll throw all of her papers, like, in a binder, shove it under the bed.
Lou kind of, like, touches her hair where Aoife touched her, like, looks all flustered, and she's like, weird, don't.
She looks kind of confused and cocks her head, and it's like...
weird about my hair, so... Anyway, yeah, I'll be back in a bit. Thanks. And she will go off and do the dishes, put her curlers in, and comes in an embarrassing white nightgown, plops herself down in a chair, and kind of watches over Aoife for a little bit before closing her eyes and focusing extremely hard on things she wants to see.
Yeah, you see Aoife's little nighttime ritual of, like, journaling for about an hour. Although she leaves it purposely very vague or in kind of coded language now, with the idea of Hecate kind of ever present in her mind. And we'll blow out the candle, go to sleep.
So Aoife, as a true fae, you no longer dream. And this is the great irony of the Sleeping Court, who dedicates their life to making mortals dream. And this probably occurs to you in some kind of whatever. So now, essentially, you go into a meditative state now, like elves do. That's like the best you kind of can do. But I will say you can always choose to cast the dream spell as part of going to sleep, because you can enjoy other people's dreams. And something in you is like the Sleeping Court frequently does. There is some kind of enjoyment they get from being in others' dreams or facilitating them, you know, crafting good dreams for those who are favored or they think deserve them, or bringing nightmares to the unjust or those who really fucking need just to be tormented. So you can always choose to participate in someone else's dreams, but your dreams are forever lost to you as long as you hold this position. How does that... I think you. It probably takes a few hours, that hazy in and out, realizing that, but how does that affect Aoife? Do you have any opinions or feelings about that?
Yeah. At first, she thinks it's restlessness and that, like, that anxiety that's keeping her awake. But then as the hours go by and, you know, Lou is, you know, soft and deep in her meditative state, and as she's kind of seeing Lou, and that's when it really kind of dawns on her that connection is gone. And especially because she was someone who loved sleep, loved sleeping late, loved her, like, weird, vivid, and bright dreams, and...
love creative, weird dreams. It's something your family... I imagine your family was always really into talking about their dreams at, like, the breakfast table, right? All the arty types just loved that kind of thing. And just, like, saw meaning, like, your grandma and grandpa
absolutely
always saw meaning. Everything had to interpret every dream, right?
Yeah, she definitely got an aunt whose, like, job it is to interpret dreams.
I read and dreams, like- yeah. That's my whole life, yeah.
And so they've always held this fascination for her. And as she realizes that that's cut off from her, she feels this deep sorrow and realizing that that's gone. And as that kind of lays heavy on her like a weighted blanket. But then she begins to find a bit of comfort in that and realizing just how she stepped into Lou's dream. That still brings her closer to everyone in a whole other way. And then so with that, she steps into her youngest sibling, her favorite sibling, Ashlyn, and visits her in her dream and finds that wonderful comfort in family.
What is Ashlyn, dreaming about? What do we see? And also, because Aoife, too, you can always choose as, you know, this dreamer, whether you are seen or not, right? As part of it. Like, is part of the dream spell as well. It's like, whether you are just watching or if you want to be a presence, this is something you choose.
And so she definitely chooses to be seen in her regular kind of natural-looking self, not as her fae self. And as she steps into Ashlyn's dream, it's all like unicorns and mythical creatures and like running through, frolicking through bright open fields of flowers. And, you know, she will bring her favorite game that Ashlyn and her always played together. And, well, you know, they're sitting in this huge, vast flower field, you know, playing board games and giggling and laughing. And, you know, it's like a slumber party, just like when they were younger and felt carefree.
Yeah. And Ashlyn is just fucking loving it. You know, like, absolutely no realization that this is an unusual dream in any way. She's just like, oh yeah, I win! And then the board, like, woo, bursts into glitter, even though she was losing or whatever. Like, it's her dream, right? So as long as you're willing to play along with it, all the fantastical, you know, you get to enjoy that. And that's wonderful. And I think something about it, too, occurs to you, it's almost like it's feeding you in some way, like it's sustaining you, and you think you're starting to understand maybe a little bit more about what this give and take is, right? There's something about you that has fundamentally changed. You are a different creature that interacts with this, with mortals' feelings in a different way. And as, you know, you spend some time in this dream, like, you know, you're enjoying it, you feel like an itching sense at the back of your mind, like something else is trying to, like, pull your attention closer to you. What do you do about that?
And she makes this excuse to Ashlyn, like, all right, well, now that you've won the last round, I've got to go have breakfast with the badgers and the rabbits, and they're going to tell me all about, you know, just some, like, nonsense. Like,
wow, okay, bye! Yeah, I was just skipping off into a field with, like, rainbows exploding out of her hands.
And she, you know, she turns and she steps and she immediately beelines toward that itching drive.
Yeah. Describe to me the door that leads you back to your house. There's something wrong nearby you. The dream of someone close. What is that door?
And I think as she kind of continues through this meadow and comes to two great oak trees where the branches reach out towards each other in loop and knot. And you see on one of the oak trees is a little carving of a chicken, and she taps on it.
Yeah, and this door swings open, and you find yourself back in, it's in Cooper, like, you're in your room, and you realize, like, you're not quite awake. You're looking down at your body, realizing, like, am I tied to someone in the house? What's going on? But you feel like there is something trying to get in. There's something trying to get in that is not supposed to be here.
And from her pocket, she pulls out this comically large magnifying glass and begins looking around in this, like, dream logic.
Yeah, and you're looking around, you're kind of, like, drifting really fast, you know, through the house, like, seeing what is going on. And, like, against several of these, like, windows and sealed doors, like, coming down the chimney, you see these, like, black and twisted tendrils, like, that don't look right. They look sick, like, as they're trying to creep through the doors. And you know somehow this is someone else trying to send false dreams into this house. You know that's what this is.
And she summons that sense again of when we were underground and confronting the great worm, mother worm, of trying to propel back that sort of psychic invasion from the worm's cries. And she, you know, summons a sort of force field that begins as this small sort of ball of energy that she holds in her hand, and as she's making the gesture to knit, you see the fibers, like, expand this ball out and grow it as she just furiously knit, her hands moving so fast that you can't even see them, and grows it out and forces it over to as like a, it's like a cozy over Cooper.
Over Cooper, you're like, no, and you feel it like as you are, you see that that smoke, that curling weird mist, like it's pushed back and out in a way. And, you know, as you've like protected the house and it's starting to expand, again, that dream logic, you can see out the windows several of these Nuska being pushed back. But they're not normal. They're not healthy. They're sick and corrupted. And you can see this, like, pulsing red veins of something, maybe like a drug, something in them as they're being blown back by your magic. And they just fall and kind of rot to the ground as you have repelled them. And you feel safe. You've kept this place safe.
Intriguing.
Yeah. It feels shitty. I think you would feel like sleeping court, like the Nuska are like, you know, they're the dream like deliverers. They're key to the sleeping court, and someone has poisoned them and twisted them. That sucks. There's a rage that comes from someone that probably isn't you, but you feel it. Like, how dare they?
Like, would it be possible to sort of like catch one?
No, I think your magic like just obliterates them as they're going. Like, they didn't stand a chance against real and true dream magic anymore. That's how hollow and like destroyed they were. There isn't even anything left for you to call them. You know that's something you can do now somehow, but
right,
it's like you can't even talk to them. It's like they're zombies, right?
Yeah, she'll lock that away for something to investigate in the future.
It's up to you, Aoife. Is there anything else you would like to do or visit? Or do you wake up?
I think with that, she wakes up.
And just real quick, Tony, was there anything you wanted to do just before we went to bed?
No.
So you come to consciousness then, Aoife, in the morning, and you see Lou is, you know, still sitting there. You haven't slept, technically, but you don't need to anymore. You're not mortal anymore. So you feel good. You feel fresh. Like you rested. And everyone else can start to wake up. See, Rook is like cramped uncomfortably, clearly slept on the armchair. But no sign, Aoife, of what you saw before. Certainly, you know, the windows are still sealed. Like, the chimney was closed, right? Like, you all, Cooper, did everything that one time you were worried about those Nuska, and there's no physical sign anything tried to get in, but you know something tried to get in.
She definitely keeps that to herself.
Is there any way, maybe with, like, training, that you would know who that Nuska is going after?
I don't know. Aoife, maybe. After time, this is brand new. Who knows what, I mean, especially, you know, and Aoife's just a vassal. Who knows what she could learn if she became a courtier or sovereign?
Ooh, okay. Well, good morning, everybody. Tony comes in, trying to lighten the mood. Can't handle this pressure. She still wants to hold on to the victory of getting rid of a big old favor. So, Lou, what'd you cook up this morning? Tell us all about it. I love to hear you describe your own meals.
Oh, my.
Tell me, Chef Lou.
Yeah, and I think, too, Lou is, like, very hard trying to focus on the positive. So, specifically because Tony had that victory, she's just made, like, a meat mountain, like, high protein, like, exactly what she would like, just, like, completed in a bread bowl on Tony's plate with a little egg smile on it with a bacon strip. And she is like, good morning.
My God, Lou. I love you. I'm in love with you. This is stunning.
I'm popular lately. Don't worry about it. I'm just happy for you.
What? Well, this is beautiful. I cannot wait. Thank you. This is exactly what I needed. What can I do for you? I can't cook, but whatever else I can do, let me know. You've done so much.
You know, there has been something that's been weighing pretty heavily on my mind that you could do for me. I think that what you do for us on the battlefield is so incredible, and just your pure strength is something to behold. But for the love of God, woman, will you please get better armor? You're scaring the shit out of me.
Yes, that's definitely something I can do. You're not wrong. I've been thinking about it too. Yes, I'll do that as soon as we get into Chasiana. Are we there? Have we got there?
Yeah, I mean, basically you were kind of taking the rest, and then, you know, it's like 30 minutes from where you are in the morning, so.
Okay, as soon as we get to Chasiana, that's number one. You're right, I know. I can't keep getting patches from Aoife and amazing breakfasts from you as much as I would still like those.
You got it.
Yeah. Rook, in contrast, goes, coffee, coffee, and just, like, walks in and starts fucking wrecking around in all your business.
And Lou just kind of, like, takes her spoon and, like, kind of, like, lightly slaps her. She's like, get out, I'm making your espresso shots.
No.
Meanwhile, she's, like, making pancakes that are just covered in honey, like, super stacked tall for Aoife as a thank you breakfast for saving my fucking butt. And she just kind of, like, puts her hands on her hips once everybody is, like, served and at the table. And she's just like, oh, this could fuel me forever. But I will have some pancakes, too.
Aoife, another curiosity. While you are perfectly happy to eat, you are not hungry. You realize you have not felt a need or desire to eat or have water or anything in literally hours.
Weird. I think that's one that really surprises her.
Yeah.
Because she's seen Coven and she's seen bars and food and, like, and everything. And
yeah, right? Like, all over the place.
And so she kind of just shrugs and enjoys.
Never tell Lou that. Never tell her that.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. She's keeping all this shit under wraps for sure.
Yeah. Ooh. They don't have to eat. They love eating, though, the experience of it, you know, and drinking and alcohol and drugs. Like, they're just like, hell yeah, dude, something different. But they don't need to technically do any of that to survive.
They don't have hunger, but they have an appetite.
Exactly. Exactly. They crave things. They don't need them, though, but that's good. All right, cool. So, gang, where are we going? Chasiana, who do what first? Lay it out for me. Order, I will say there are a couple things I've seen from you might have consequences depending on when they happen. So order is important. Who wants to do what scenes in what order?
Well, in that case, I feel like it might... easiest thing is for me to just get some armor.
What could go wrong there?
Yeah.
Okay. We can, okay, so the one thing, though, with order is, did we already sell the rose?
No.
No, we decided Coven was somewhere we're going to have to go to do that, so that might be something we have to do later.
Yeah, so because right now we only have, like, a little over 1.1k, and I'm not sure what kind of armor you wanted.
We decided on half plate, right? Was that the...
Yeah, so that'd be 750, and I don't think my carousing is going to cost that much.
Yeah, and I think if you're buying it in Chasiana, too, I think it's safe to say you could probably get that for about 600 with your mama's discount and connections.
Gotta love your moms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first things first, we get to your mama's. We say, hello, how you doing? So good to see you. Missed you, thought about you.
Love it, love
Happy
it.
Holidays. I don't know how much time has passed.
Well, I'm thinking while we're on the way into Chasiana, Aoife really wants to look for Whistler's Bell where they had buried it initially. So she'll ask to, you know, drop me off there. I'll have a look around, see if I can find it, and I'll meet you back up at your mom's. Hopefully not empty-handed.
Well, be careful, Aoife. You are Fae now. I don't even know if you can touch it. Are you sure you're going to be okay?
It's fine. I'll figure it out.
Internally, it's just like, it's fine, let people do their own things. You're not in control of everything that's not possibly in control of everything. And she just is like, okay, we'll drop you off.
Well, once we do get to Frida's place, I will say, Frida, The shield place you recommended was wonderful, got a great shield, and now I'm in the market for some new armor. Where do you think I should go to get it, you know, a fair price?
We'll resolve that here, but I'm writing down my order of operations. Here is the plan. See, so okay. One, we're dropping off Eva alone to pick up the bell.
What could go wrong?
Eva alone to pick up bell, okay?
Don't like it.
And then we're going to Frida's. So that will be Tony, Lou, and Rook going to Frida's. And then what next are you hoping to do?
And then Lou probably during that time will catch up with Cassie and try to figure out how much she knows. How much anybody knows.
What did Mama tell you? She showed you the baby pictures, didn't she? Okay.
I do think I also, while I'm talking to Frida, want to see what she's found out about Briar. So that while we're here, since I can't do my patron thing, since it needs to be out of coven, I can tail him and kind of see what this kid is all about.
Okay. And then we're thinking that after all that Chassiana business is resolved, or is there anything else there before we want to go back to Coven and try to sell the roses?
Gain a patron.
And then also, by the way, we need to decide, because at the end of this time, you're going to be meeting whoever the Serena is sending. So where have you told the Serena you want to meet this person?
I kind of feel like with all the heat that's on the Serena at the moment, we should probably not meet in Valen because there's going to be a lot of eyes going in there. So probably having them meet somewhere low key.
Do we want to do where we originally met the Serena? In the Acropolis?
But that's like right in Valen.
That's like right outside the city. Yeah.
We can do that. I just like, I'm nervous to be anywhere near there.
Yeah, because they can meet you, I mean, anywhere in the Eldrin Empire. You don't know how the Serena is getting this person there or where they're coming from, so.
We could have them meet in Chassiana because then we have, like, the family's eyes all over for any suspicious activity around them.
That makes sense. Do we know who it is?
You do not know who it is.
Hmm.
You assume that closer to it, you'll kind of get a physical description, sort of like what you did with Serena when she was like, here's my personality of person to look out for. It's probably the best you're going to get. But as of yet, you have not been told. So meet them. So basically, you'll be bouncing back to Chassiana to meet them. So I have dropping off Aoife to deal with picking up the bell. Meanwhile, Tony, Lou, Rook are going to Frida's. Tony's going to shop for armor. Lou's going to visit Cassie, check up on Briar. That'll probably take a day or two. And then you're all going to go back to Coven. Sell off some roses, get a patron, that'll take a few days, and then you're gonna meet back up in Chassiana with whoever this mystery person is, yes?
Cool. Alright.
Well, that seems like a good plan, and I'm looking forward to playing through it next time, but that's pretty much where we're at for the end of this episode, so, wow, guys, we've done it! We all met up, we all had some feelings. How we all doing? This was a big major change, so I'm glad we all got a chance to talk about it, because I feel like that would have been weird if we didn't.
Indeed.
This dramatic life change. Literally a creature type. You're literally a different being.
You're literally touching my hair sensually.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that. I mean,
that was
it the
fake?
Was it Aoife? Was it the new thing? I don't know. I'm confused and terrified and want to know more.
What a maniacal laugh you just gave us.
Foreshadowing.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, thank you everybody so much for stopping by for this episode. We are so excited to be back on track, back from our holiday break and like sending you that good content. So thank you all. Thank you all so much for joining us. Also, special thank you to all of you who joined us at PAX. This is the first episode we've recorded since we've been back. So it was really, really awesome to see all of you at PAX Unplugged. We loved it. Filled our hearts with joy. I know I personally am like sustained by seeing you all and like just the goodness and positiveness of all of that. So thank you so much. We also, of course, have some other people we need to thank. We like to take some time at the end of each episode to thank our Patreon donors. Podcasts don't make any money. I don't know if you knew that. There is no actual income we get from doing this show. All of this time and effort, the people who reward us are our Patreon donors, the folks who go and donate as little as $1 a month to patreon.com/venturemaidens. You guys are the light of our lives, the reason we can go to PAX, the reason we can make books and do this stream. We've been going almost 7 years now because of all of you, you beautiful, wonderful humans. So we're going to take some time to thank, especially the Arnie's cohorts and Ferris Drinking Mate, our two highest tiers. So I want to say a big ol' thank you so much to Debbie.
And thank you to Curry.
Always thank you to Muffin at the one on Drury Lane on Twitter or X.
We all call it Twitter. It's fine.
Whatever it is now.
And thank you so much, Nissa McKinnon.
Thank you to Richie113 on our Discord.
And thank you to Tony.
Tony, thank you.
In our Farrah's Drinking Mate tier, thank you to Nadia.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much, Markalai.
Thanks, Fable.
Thank you, Sheepish Gnome.
And what's up, Destiny? Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you, Mrim.
Thank you, Noon, from the Discord server.
And thank you to Brittany.
And thank you, Alan at Obsidian Citrix, our new cake master. Thank you so much.
And of course, thank you to Ben, aka Flower Crown Gaming, our wiki master.
You all rock our lives. Thank you so much for being here. Can't wait to see what happens next time, because boy, did we pick the one thing going first that was really time sensitive, and I love it. So we'll see you. We'll see you all next time. But until then, I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Conowich.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I played Luveri Sath, your Drow Rogue.
Hey, I'm Nassim. I played your Half-Orc Fighter and Druid, Tony Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and I have been Aoife Flannery, your vexing vassal of the Sleeping Court.
Ooh, now we've got a V. Good luck with synonyms for that. Yes! That's it. That's all we've got to you. So, until next time, everybody.
Venture away!